Good morning, everyone. Let us begin. A lot to do today. Today's daf is Yurchas. We are picking up on Yud Zayin Amud Beis 17b. We've got a lot to do. I'm not even counting the number of lines from the bottom, but we're starting pretty much in the middle of the page. Middle of Yud Zayin Amud Beis, right by the two dots. Chasan Imratza Likros. Our shir this morning is dedicated by our Talmud Torah sponsors for the month of Teves, Shirley Elbaum, together with their sons Avron, Sean, and Judah Elbaum, and their families, in memory of their beloved husband and father, Jerry Elbaum, and the commemoration of his 10th yahrzeit. We hope that the merit of our Talmud Torah, his neshama will have an aliyah, and his family a nechama. And the week of learning is dedicated by the family, the children of Pam Weissman, in recognition of her birthday, and her commitment, and in recognition of her commitment to Derech Eretz and to Talmud Torah. We wish Pam an incredible birthday, a Mazel Tikka birthday, a year filled with Hatzlacha, growth and Mazel, and Amir Tzashem, Arichos Yamim Vishanim, to enjoy her beautiful Mishpacha. Amen. And I will say with that, let us begin. Chasan, in Rotza Likros. Well, remember again, the Mishnah said something very interesting. The Mishnah said that if a Chasan wants to read Kriyat Shema, he has the ability to go ahead and read Kriyat Shema. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, no. Not true. Just because you want to go ahead and utter the name of God does not give you the right to do so. So Rabbi Shimon Gamliel comes along and says, that in fact, you are not permitted to, Chasan is not permitted to recite Kriyat Shema. So says the Gemara, L'meimra, the Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Chayish Liyuhura. The Bosse is very interesting. What's Rabbi Shimon Gamliel's issue? Rashi says over here a concept of Chayish Liyuhura, which means ultimately, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says like this, once Chazal said you're exempt from something, then what? To go ahead and go out of your way to do it has the appearance of arrogance. So once Chazal said you're potter, then you're potter. For a Chasan to go ahead and now start reciting Kriyat Shema is mechzi ki yehura. It has the appearance ultimately of arrogance. So it sounds like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying, therefore, once the Chasan is potter, he is not permitted to recite it. And it sounds like the Rabbanon are saying, no, if the Chasan wants to go ahead and say Kriyat Shema, he can do so, which sounds like that what? According to the Rabbanon, they're not choshesh for something that has the appearance, ultimately, of arrogance. But we heard just the opposite, right? To which the Gemara says, this nan. There's an interesting minhag over here about what do you do about malacha on Tisha B'Av. So in a place where there's a minhag not to do malacha, we don't do malacha. In a place where there's a minhag to do malacha, they do malacha. The chol makom, but in all places, tamidi chachamim b'teilim. Tamidi chachamim don't do malacha on Tisha B'Av. They reserve the day ultimately for mourning for the losses of Klal Yisrael, and they do not go ahead and do malacha. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel Omer, li'olam yaseh kol adam es atzmo ki tamid chacham. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, every person should make himself like a Talmud Chacham, ultimately, and what? Not do work on Tisha B'Av. Now, Bosei, so now we have a problem. Kasha d'Rabban d'Rabban, Kasha Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. Bosei, so remember again, in our Mishnah, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, if we say that a Chasan can't have Kriyat Shema, you can't go ahead and decide on your own to say Kriyat Shema as a Chasan, because it looks arrogant. Yet, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is saying over here that what? If I live in a city where the minhag is not to do Malacha, I have the right, and not only have the right, I should conduct myself like a Talmud Chacham and not do Malacha. So it sounds like Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is not Mechsi the Yehura, and the Rabbanan Simon also in the Mishnah, the Rabbanan seemed to indicate that what? That Halacha L'maisa, if the Chasan decides he wants to say Kriyat Shema, I can do so. Which sounds like we're not Choshesh or Mechsi ki Yehura, yet when it comes to Malacha on Tisha B'Av, ultimately again, the Rabbanan are saying that you should conduct yourself in accordance with the minhag of your city. So which one is it? Which the Gemara says, "I'm Rabbi Yochanan, Muchlefes Hashita." You're right. The truth is, just the Shitos by Tisha B'Av got mixed up, flipped them, and therefore again, the Mishnah by Tisha B'Av or the Brisa by Tisha B'Av ultimately aligns with our Mishnah. Rav Shisha Breid, Rav Yidi, Amar Le'olam Lo Tachlif. No. Don't start switching around opinions. Rather, Drabbanan Lo Kasha. What says great Gemara? See, it's not a contradiction amongst the Drabbanan. Why not? Kevan Duchuli Ama Kakari V'Iuv Nami Kakari Lo Mechzikira. What says the Drabbanan say like this? When does something have the appearance of arrogance? If you're doing something that no one else is doing. So no one else is doing it, but you're doing it. That's when it has the appearance of arrogance. Right? On the Chasan's wedding night, we'll say, what is everyone else doing? They're saying Kriyat Shema. So if the Chasan joins in and says Kriyat Shema also, he's not standing out. So because he doesn't stand out, it doesn't have the appearance of arrogance. But on the other hand, if the person lives in a city where the minhag is to do malacha on Tisha B'Av, and he doesn't do malacha on Tisha B'Av, then what? That stands out. And because that stands out, ultimately, again, that has the appearance of arrogance. We'll say similarly again, Rav Shimon Gamliel as well, not a contradiction. Why not? Hasam, the Kavanah Talia Milsa. Rav will say, by the Chassan and Kriyat Shema, why do we say that the Chassan doesn't say Kriyat Shema? Because Kriyat Shema requires Kavanah. And what do we say? Ba'anan Sahadi Dilomatsi Lachavoni Daite. We say, Chassan, we know you can't have Kavanah. That's what we know. You can't have Kavanah. And therefore, again, we don't care if you say you can have Kavanah. We know that you can't have Kavanah. So the Gemara says, Aval Hacha, therefore, again, if the Chassan goes ahead and decides to say Shema, that has the appearance of Yorah, that has the appearance of arrogance. Aval Haroah, Omer Melachu De'in Lo. Rav said, when it comes to Tisha B'Av, if a person decides, you know what, even though the minhag in my city is that what? Is that I'm not going to do work like a Talmud Chacham. Even though what? The minhag of the city is to do work. That doesn't have the appearance of arrogance. Why not? The Gemara says, because Haroah, someone who sees me not doing work on Tisha B'Av will assume what? Malachu De'in Lo. I have no work on that day. Right? Whatever it is, I'm just have a free day, have a day off. The Gemara says, Puk Chazi. After all, just take a look around. Kama batlani ika bashuka. Like, look how many people are wandering around the marketplace on a given day. There are always people wandering around. So the notion that I'm not working on Tisha B'Av, people aren't going to say, oh, you see that guy thinks he's a Talmud Chacham. They're just going to say what? Just going to say what? Whatever. He's a guy with a lot of time on his hands because there are a lot of people out here. So we'll say, and an incredible lesson teaching us this idea that a person ultimately, again, part of the concept of being Mo'urav im Habrios, which we normally translate as getting along with other people, also means not standing out, right? That, you know, there are some people who just like, they love to buck the system, you know? They love to be the ones who go against the system, go against it. I would say, so sometimes like you have to do that, but more often than not, you'll be a member of the community, right? You become a member of the klal, you become a member of the greater group. And Lamais again, not to do this, mostly in a way this comes out, the Mishnah Berurah says this, and this was, you know, mostly Mishnah Berurah brings this down by someone who decides to put on tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. The Hasidim already popularized this practice of putting on two sets of tefillin. But let's say I'm not a chassid. So again, I decide, you know what, I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to put on tefillin of Rabbeinu Tam. The Mishnah Berurah says, Mechzik Yehura. It has the appearance of arrogance. Why? Because that's not the minhag in our community. Again, Hasidim is different, right? The Hasidim that absolutely is the minhag in their community. And that became, again, accepted practice. But this idea, this incredible, interesting idea, on one hand, going ahead and always pushing myself to do more. On the other hand, not doing things which cause me to stand out and have the possibility of making me look like I feel superior, or that I'm better, or that there's an air of arrogance. This incredible balance that we have. Hadron Allah, Hayakore. We'll say Mazel Tov. Mazel Tov, Mazel Tov. Second parak of Shas under our belt. Mishnah. That was an incredible celebration. Misha Meisa Mutlafanov. Good. So let's say, now ultimately, again, next case, next situation. Someone lost a loved one. Now we'll say, we'll actually see what the parameters of this case is. Literally, it means someone has a dead relative in front of them. Both were describing over here the state of aninos. And in the state of aninos, a person, remember, aninos is the period between death and burial. During that time, a person is potter from all mitzvos. Shema, Shemona Esrei, Tefillin, and all mitzvos, all positive mitzvos. Obviously, you can't do averos, right? But lamaisa, you are exempt from all positive mitzvos. What's the logic over here? We'll see that really it's the concept of ha'osik b'mitzvah patur min ha'mitzvah. Since we assume that the person is actively involved in caring for the dead, Rashi says over here, Misha meisa patur miklos kriyashma, lefishu tarud b'machsheves kvurasa, v'havi dumya d'chasan d'patur mishum tirda d'mitzvah. It's very interesting. Rashi understands it over here to be a din in tirda, which is quite fascinating. Many others understand this is not tirda. Remember, tirda means cognitive or mental preoccupation. It's not necessarily just tirda. There's also other active engagement in taking care of the needs of the dead that ultimately, again, really has an iskus b'mitzvah. Also, remember, we made this chilik a few days ago, the distinction between tirda and iskus, right? I can be actively involved in a mitzvah versus preoccupied. Rashi understands that this is a din of preoccupation. No samita v'chilufein v'chilufei chilufein. So we'll say, what about those carrying the casket? Or really, we'll remember again, they didn't really use a casket. They used a bier, right? They would carry the body on like a bed, on like a stretcher. So no samita, those who are going to carry the beer, the chilufayin, and those who are going to switch off. Well, remember again, they would go ahead and they would switch off with people, the chilufayin. And again, those who would take on the shift after that, eshelifnei amita veshela achar amita, those in front of the beer and those after the beer, eshelifnei amita tzarach b'am p'turin. So we'll say, so those ultimately, again, who are in front of the funeral beer, who are required, or as we'll say, remember, the casket, meaning that the beer is coming towards them, so they're still necessary, they are pater from Shema. Veshela achar amita, but those behind the funeral beer, tzarach b'an chayavin, v'tzarach b'an chayavin, those who are necessary, ultimately, again, are chayiv. So we'll say, so the idea being, anyone who is directly necessary now for the carrying of the funeral bier will be pater from, I'm sorry, those behind the funeral bier who have already carried the funeral bier will now be chayiv in Kriyat Shema. Ve'elu ve'elu patura min atila. But I will say, everyone involved in the carrying of the bier, whether those behind or those in front, will be pater from Shmona Esrei. Kavru asameis v'chazru. We'll say, after they buried the dead, and now the avelim are coming back. Im yuchol on the haskav ligmar shalei agilu shura. We'll say, so remember again, their practices very much reflect our practices. After they buried the dead, the aval would come back, and they would form a shura. They would form a line. Now, we'll say, their shura was a little bit different. Ultimately, again, as the aval was walking back, they would surround the aval. That was their shura. But again, the idea is the same. After the kfur, the aval comes back, and the people assembled offer midei detanchuma. They offer words of consolation. So if after the burial, if there's enough time before the avelim get back to the shura to be able to say Shema, then what? Yaschilu. Then they should begin and say Shema. Ve'im lav. But if there's not enough time to go ahead and to say Shema before the avelim get to the shura, then what? Lo yaschilu. They shouldn't begin. Ha'om de mishura pinimim. Those who are standing on the inside shura, because we'll say sometimes if there was a large levaya, then what? There would sometimes be multiple, there would be depth to the shura, right? So again, if I'm standing on the, we'll call it the inside of the shura, direct contact with the avelim, peturim, I'm pater from Shema. Vachitzonim, but those ultimately, again, who are further back from the avelim, chayavim, ultimately, again, will be chayav in Shema. Good, Abbas, we'll define the parameters of all of these halachas inside the Gemara. Skip the parentheses. Muta alafan of inshin, muta alafan of lo. So we'll say, the Mishnah indicates to me what? That when is a person exempt from Shema? When mamish, the corpse is in front of them. So if the corpse is in front of me, then halacha lemaisa, that's when I'm pater. But if the corpse is not in front of me, I'm chayiv. Rashi says, shinu muta alafan of kigon, hu babayis echad vameisa bayis achar. So I'll say, for example, the Gemara says like this. Here's what it sounds like. It sounds like Reuven loses a close relative for whom he's obligated to mourn, and that corpse is right in front of him. That's when he is pater from Shema. But if Reuven loses a close relative, but the corpse is in house A, and Reuven's in house B, it sounds like what? It sounds like he will be chayiv. Where does the Mishnah make that inference from? Because we'll say, how does the Mishnah read? Mi shemeso mutal lefanav. Literal translation? Someone, right? Whose corpse of a loved one is in front of him. So the Gemara says, but is that really true? Or minhi, so understand what the Gemara is saying over here. The exemption the Gemara understands is rooted in what? Is rooted in proximity. Right? It's not just simply that Reuven lost a relative and therefore again has mental preoccupation with the avelos and the needs for the burial. This is a din in proximity. Because the mace is there, that's what generates the tirda, and the tirda exempts me from Shema. So says the Gemara or Minhi, where is the kasha? Misha mesa mutulafan of ocha babayis achar. Someone will say who lost a loved one and the corpse is right there in front of me. So what's the halacha? You shouldn't eat in the same place as the corpse. So you should go ahead and eat in a different home. If you don't have another home to go eat in, you go eat in your friend's house. Maybe if you don't have a friend or your friend doesn't have a house, go ahead and make a partition, and then you could eat in the same house. And if you can't make a mechitza, then what? Ultimately, again, you turn your head away and you could eat. You should not recline when you eat. You shouldn't eat meat and you shouldn't drink wine. Because, again, these things could potentially distract one from the loss. You don't make hamotzi. You don't join in the zimun. Top of your ches. Right? You ultimately, again, no one has to be motzi you in their brachos. You're not part of the zimun. And you are pater from all mitzvos. Ubi Shabbos. What happens if Rachman al-San, a person experiences a loss on Shabbos? Mesa va'ochal basar v'shosiyai. So you could recline, you could eat meat, you could drink wine. Mevarich, you make brachas. Mezamein, you participate in a zimun. Mevarich al-al, someone could be mostly with brachas. Mezamein, if you're part of a mezumin. The chayv v'chal ha-mitzos ha-amuras patorah. And you're chayv in all mitzos. Ronos Rabbo say, the concept of, we saw this in our Moed Katan days, the concept of aninos does not apply on Shabbos. Remember again, Rabbo say, the notion of that an onin is pater from all mitzvos is a din in oseik b'mitzvah, patra mina mitzvah. Since you are engaged in the mitzvah of taking care of the dead, therefore you are exempt from all other mitzvahs. On Shabbos, where there is nothing for you to do when taking care of the dead, therefore what? You're chayv in all mitzvahs. So Shabbos, I just want to point out, that's why Rashi's interpretation of the Mishnah, as interpreting this as a case of tirda, is very interesting. Because it's not really tirda. It's not really tirda. It's really iskus. Remember again, we made that chiluk on Sunday. Iskus versus tirda. So again, there's a whole discussion why Rashi chooses to go ahead and define it this way, not beyond our scope for now. Rav Shigal says as follows. Once you are chayv in these mitzvos, you're chayv in all mitzvos. Okay. Rav Shigal seemingly is saying the same thing as the Tanakama. They're both saying that what? If a person experiences a loss on Shabbos, there's no aninos on Shabbos, and therefore a person will be chayv in all mitzvos. What is Reb Shimon Leo coming to add? To which the Gemara says, Tashmish Hamita Ika Beinayhu. They both say, what about marital intimacy? Right? What about the idea that a husband has an obligation towards a physical intimacy towards his wife? Let's say, again, about the Ono, right? The period of time where a husband is obligated to fulfill that obligation falls out on that Shabbos. Is there a din? Is there a concept of physical intimacy during aninos? If you look at Rashi, Ika benayu, Tashi Ika benayu, Reb Shimon Chayiv, Reb Shimon Chayiv Avel Ba'ono B'Shabbos. According to Reb Shimon would say that when he says you're chayiv in all mitzvos, it means even ona, even physical intimacy. Whereas the Tanakama would seem to indicate that no, physical intimacy during aninos is something that ultimately is inappropriate. I will say, but for our purposes, why are we bringing this up? Katani mihas, patur mikriyashma, uminat tefila, uminat tefillin, umikomitzos ha'amuras batorah. So we'll say, here's what's interesting. But what comes out? What comes out of here is, we'll say, this price says that when a person loses a relative for whom they're obligated to mourn, we'll say, they're patur from everything. Now, in the case, they're patur from everything even if they're not in the same house as the mace. After all, again, what did the Braisa say? The Braisa say you shouldn't eat in the same house. You should go eat somewhere else. And what happens when you go eat somewhere else? You're patur from amotzi, you're patur from benching, you're patur from shema. So it indicates to us that proximity is not a necessity by aninos. That the concept ultimately, again, of the patura of aninos is a person has suffered a loss. Whether the mace is in front of them or not is irrelevant. Either way, there is a patur exemption from mitzvos that seemingly contradicts our Mishnah. Amra papa, tirgama machzia panav ocham. Maybe when the Braisa says that shepatra from all of these things, what's the case? That's the case where the person is in the same house as the mace, and they just turned their head away from the mace. Rav Ashi says no. Kevon shemuta alav lekovro kimuta lefanadar. We'll say here is the upper phrase. Rav Ashi says, once the obligation of burial is upon you, it's as if the corpse is in front of you. What Rav Ashi says is that Misha Mesa Mutal Lefanov does not have to be read as someone whose relative's corpse is right in front of them. Rather, how does it read? Someone whose relative's burial is incumbent upon them. So once I have responsibility to go ahead and take care of the needs of the burial, then halacha lemaisa, again, that's meso muta lefanav. That generates the exemption from mitzvahs. Which I will say, just so you should know, goes ahead and shne'emar, we call it the pasuk shne'emar, vayakam Avraham mi'al p'nei meso, v'ne'emar ve'ekbira meisim milfanai. Kozman shemuta alav lekovro, kimuta lefanav dami. Anytime that there's an obligation for the love of burial, right? So ultimately, it's as if the corpse is in front of me. Shabbos says, so this generates an incredibly important halacha. And this is how we pass halacha lemaisa in Avelos. An onin is pater for mitzvos, whether ultimately, again, the mace is in front of them or not in front of them. Jose, I will tell you something very interesting. There's an incredible amount of halachic literature that's written regarding what happens once you give over the responsibilities of kvura to someone else. So, for example, historically, what used to happen was is that there'd be a chevra kadisha, right, a burial society. So, what would happen is you would, right, a person would pass away. You'd make arrangements with the burial society, the chevra kadisha, and the chevra kadisha would take it from there. They would take it from there. So I, as the family member, would no longer have any more responsibilities vis-a-vis the mace. So is there still a patur of mitzvos during that time or not? So this is interesting machlokes aposkim. So the general consensus is yes, which is where Rashi comes in, right? Because we'll say there's also an element of tirda over here, of cognitive or mental preoccupation. There's also the need to prepare a hesped, a eulogy. So interestingly enough, even though what generates the initial exemption is a need to be preoccupied with the details of the burial, it appears even once those details have been set and there are others who are taking care of those details, the exemption still applies. Interesting. So the Gemara says as follows. Mutal meso in aval mishamar lo. Now what it sounds like over here is the only time you're parted from mitzvos is when ultimately, again, you have a person has lost a relative. If I lost a relative who I'm obligated to mourn for, that's when I have an exemption from mitzvos. Aval mishamro, what happens if I'm a shomer? Right, there's a din, we'll talk about this now. There's a din, ultimately, again, I'm not leaving a corpse alone. Not leaving a body alone. So if I'm a shomer, it sounds like, and even though I both say, what happens when you're a shomer? What happens if you're a shomer? That's mamish, neis muta lefanov. It sounds like I would not be exempt from mitzvos. Aye, is that true? V'hatanya, hamashamer es hameis. If somebody does shmira, afa pi she'eno meis. So even though it's not your relative, part of me kriyas shema minat tefillah mikomet samuras b'torah. You are part of from everything, right? You're part of from all mitzvos. Mishamro afa. So what do you see from here? You see that even a shomer, and this is the halacha, even a shomer is part of from mitzvos. To which the Gemara says, you're right. Mishamro afa pi she'eno meiso. So we'll say the halacha is ultimately, again, either way, whether if you are a shomer, you are exempt from mitzvos. If it's your relative, right, meaning whom you're obligated to mourn for, you're also exempt from mitzvos, even if you're not physically present. So we'll say, so in other words, anyone who is effectively, actively taking care of the needs of the dead is exempt from mitzvos. So if you're obligated to mourn, then ultimately you're part of mitzvos in aninus. If you're a shomer, you are part of mitzvos as well. To which the Gemara says, meso umishamro in ava mahalich bebeis hakvaras lo. So we see over here that there's an exemption from mitzvos either if it's your close relative or if you're doing shmira. But if you're walking in the cemetery, you would not be exempt from mitzvos. I have a tanya, is that true? Lo yahalich adam beis hakvaras betulin berosho besefer Torah bizro'o the kore. But say when a person is walking in a cemetery, a person should not walk into a cemetery with his tefillin on or with a sefer Torah in his arm, or going ahead and actively learning. And if you do so, Vim Ose came over Mishum Loeg Larash Cheref Osehu. They're in violation, ultimately, again, of the Pasek Mishlei, which literally means he who disparages the pauper goes ahead and curses his maker. So we'll say, what's the idea in this metaphor? So the mace, the person who's dead, is the pauper. Why is he the pauper? Because he can't do mitzvos. I will say, do you hear this incredible yisod, this incredible musar? I will say, the greatest form of wealth, the greatest form of wealth in life is not something that can be measured in currency. The greatest form of wealth in life is spiritual wealth. The mitzvos you do, the ma'asim tovim you do, the chasadim you do, the spiritual identity you create and cultivate for yourself, that is your wealth in life. V'haraya, the rich are poor. I'm sorry, that's rich or poor. The dead are poor, right? The dead are poor, right? Why are the dead poor? Ultimately, again, because they have no ability to perform mitzvos. So the Gemara says, here's the difference. Hasam toch arba amosu, the asar. Chutzla arba amos chayiv. And both say, ultimately, again, it's true. When do you have to be sensitive about the performance of mitzvos in a cemetery? Only if you're within dalet amos of a grave. If you're within 6 feet of a grave, that's when you must be sensitive, ultimately, to what? To the performance of mitzvos. But outside of 6 feet of the grave, there's no problem with performance of mitzvos. Damar mar, meis tov is dalet amos le kriyashma. Hocha, chutz le dalet amos nami pater. Because also we say that a meis, if you're within dalet amos, right, you don't say kriyashma. So ultimately, I'm teaching us that halacha le meisam, halacha lemaisa, within dalet amos of a mace, you do not go ahead and do public mitzvah. So Rabbi says, this comes up, that is halacha lemaisa. Also, let's say even a person wears their tzitzis out, the person has to be careful to go ahead and tuck their tzitzis in when coming in contact with a grave. So the Gemara says, gufa hamashamres ha-meis chayiv afapisha eino meiso. So Rabbi, remember again, we just said before, that if a person is performing shmira, right, the person is watching a corpse, they are chayiv, I'm sorry, so we'll say if a person is doing shmira, they're staying with the corpse, so they're going to go ahead and be pater from shma, even though what? It's not their relative. So the Gemara says, pater mikriya shma, umina tfila, umina tfilin, umikomitzas ha'amuras patora. So we'll say that's talacha. If you're a shomer, you're osik b'mitzvah, and therefore you are pater min ha'mitzvah. Ultimately, again, you're engaged in the mitzvah of watching the corpse, and therefore, again, you are exempt from all positive mitzvahs. What happens if there are two people doing shmira? So we'll say then, zem shamer v'zeh korei, zem shamer v'zeh korei. So obviously, if there are two people, then what? Then halacha lemaisa, then halacha, they should switch off. Ben Azai says, hayu ba'im b'svina. What happens if they're traveling together on a boat? Right? So we'll say, so again, meaning you have two people traveling together with a corpse, or someone passed away on the boat, whatever it is. But the point is, two people are doing shmira on a boat. So what's the halacha? Manicho bezavis zu'um ispadlin shneim bezavis acheres. They could put the corpse, they could put the body in one corner, and they could daven in a different corner. In other words, they're both saying, the idea being, you can't daven in dalet amos of the corpse, that's what we just said before, but on a boat, apparently, again, they could both leave the corpse in the corner and go daven in a separate corner. Why is that? My benayu, amravino, choshishin la'achbarim ika benayu. Mar savr chosh chayshinon, umar savr lo chayshinon. I both say, this is actually a fascinating idea. Why is it that we do shmira? See, I both say, we often assume that the whole motivation for shmira is some esoteric idea of not leaving the soul alone, which is true. That's the Zohar brings down, that between the time of death and burial, the soul hovers over the body, and therefore it's a disorienting experience for the soul, and we give the soul comfort by not leaving the soul alone. That's the concept of shmira. But that actually was not the motivation of shmira. The initial motivation of shmira was much more practical. We don't want rodents getting to the body. So the idea was to watch the body to safeguard it from rodents. That's the idea. So what's the shaila? The shaila is, does this concern exist on a boat? What opinion says no? Therefore, there's no din of shmira, ultimately, again, on a boat. The other opinion says, even on a boat, you'd have to be choshesh for achbarim, for mice, for rodents, and therefore you should do shmira on a boat as well. It's interesting. Tan Rabbanan, hamolichat samos, mimakom lemakom. So what's the interesting case? If somebody is transporting bones from one place to another, so again, this goes back, we spoke about this, I don't know if it was on Sunday or late last week, the concept of likot atzamos. This could happen in a very simple way, which is, remember, they used to bury in burial caves. So they would hollow out like shelves in burial caves. I mentioned this, right? If you're in East Yerushalayim, you go right next to the kever of Shimon HaTzadik, there's an incredible kever that's marked the kever of the Sanhedrin HaKatan. It's not really the Sanhedrin HaKatan. It just happened that they found like 21, 23 like burial slots in there. So they would put the bodies on these shelves, allow the bodies to decompose, gather up the bones, and then you would bury the bones in family plots. What's the godless of that? The godless of it is you have a lot more burial space, because obviously it takes much, much less space to bury bones than it does to go ahead and bury a body. So therefore, again, imagine someone is transporting bones to be buried in a family plot. So what's the halacha? Harei zelo yitnem b'desakya. V'yitnem agab b'chabi. You shouldn't throw the bones into a sack and then throw it over your donkey, right? So the idea we'll say is, in other words, you should treat the bones with respect. So the Gemara says, v'yirkav aleihem, and ride on top of them. Mipnei shenoig b'hem minap gizayon. Because ultimately, again, that's not treating the bones, the remains, with proper respect. V'mahayim misar mipnei nochrim, or mipnei listim. But if halacha l'mayin say you were scared because of nochrim, or because of listim, then what, because of Gentiles, or because of robbers? And therefore, Rashi points out over here, v'tzarech lirkav ala sus v'loros. Therefore, you have to ride fast from where you're going. Then mutter. Then ultimately, again, it's mutter to put the bones in a sack, tie them onto the saddle, and ride quickly. Ukidarech shonu batzamas, Kachanu b'sefer Torah, and I will say the same halacha that they said by bones, they also said by sefer Torah, to which the Gemara says, Ahiyah, what is that referring to? Ilema aresha, if you want to say it the same way that you can't put the bones in a sack and tie it to the saddle of the donkey, you can't do that to a sefer Torah. Pshita, that's obvious. Mi gara sefer Torah me'atzamos, would a sefer Torah be treated with any less kavod than bones? Ela asefer, that it's referring to the end of the braisa, which means that what? If you're carrying a sefer Torah and you are concerned, you're scared of nachrim or listim, then what? You can put the sefer Torah in a sack, tie it to your saddle, and ride as quickly as possible. Amarach v'am Rabbi Yehuda. Kol haroa me'seinu melaveh. Whoever sees a corpse, whoever sees a levaya, and is not melaveh, does not participate in the funeral procession, over mishum loig l'rash cheref oseyu. V'imhilval mascharo. And if you accompany the dead on their journey, you join a funeral procession, what's your schar? Am ravasi l'avakasav omer, malva Hashem chonin dal. That literally, again, he who goes ahead and has compassion on the pauper, it's as if he lends God. And how do you honor God? Chonin Evyon. So we'll say it's interesting. You see that a dead person is constantly referred to as a pauper or someone who is impoverished. Right? The idea being that when the scariest part of death, Rabbi says, is not the cessation of life. The scariest part of death is the inability to perform mitzvos. Because the moment I can no longer perform mitzvos, I am poor. I am impoverished. I'm stuck with what I have and can no longer replenish my spiritual resources. So therefore, there is this idea of, just like we have an idea in life of taking care of the poor and impoverished, we have the idea in death of taking care of the poor and impoverished as well. Rabbi Chira, Rabbi Yochanan, Havushakli va'azli be'sakvar. So what's this interesting Gemara? Rabbi Chira, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Yonasan, excuse me, we're walking in the cemetery. Havakashaje t'chalta de Rabbi Yonasan. So Rabbi Yonasan's t'chelas, right, his tzitzis, we're dragging on the ground. Amr Rabbi Chia, Dalye, pick up your tzitzis. Kadesh lo yomru lamachar ba'in etzlein of achshav mechar fenosanu. That the dead should not say, tomorrow these guys are going to join us. And today they degrade us. Amr Lei, supposed to listen to this. Amr Lei, umi yade kulihai, do the dead really know what is happening? Is supposed to, this is an incredible Gemara. Do the dead really know what's happening in this world? But yet the Pasuk says that the dead don't know anything. The dead don't know anything. So the Gemara says, Amrlei im karisa lo shanisa. So he said to him, obviously, if you learned, you haven't reviewed your learning. Im shanisa lo shilashta. And if you reviewed your learning, you haven't reviewed it a third time. Im shilashta lo pershulacha. And if you learned it a third time, then obviously you didn't learn it correctly. Right? In other words, we'll say, or clearly, you were sleeping during shir. Because after what does the pasuk say? Ki achayim yodim she'amusum. The living know that they will die. Who does that refer to? Elu tzadikim, this refers to the righteous, shebemisasa nikru chaim, even when they're dead are called alive, because their memory and their legacy continues to inspire. Shneamar, ubenayo ben Yehoyada ben Ishchai. Benayo ben Yehoyada was the son of a living man, Rav Paulin, right? He accomplished many things. Mikavtzel, sounds like a place. Mikavtzel who hika es shnei aria moav. He went ahead and he smote the two great leaders, the two great lions of Moab. This is all the pasuk. And he went and he killed the lion inside of the pit on the day of snow. So we'll say this is all from Shmuel Beis. We're going to discuss what this pasuk means in just a moment. Amad Beis. So we'll say, what do these phrases mean? Ben Ishchai. What does it mean? Is the son of the living man. Atu koli am b'nei meisi ninu. Everyone else is dead. That he's called the son of the living man. Ella Ben Ishchai, Shafilu b'misasa karichai. Rather, what does it mean? He's a Ben Ishchai because even in his death, he's called living. Rav Paulin miKavtzel, literally he accomplished many things. From Kavtzel, Sheriba v'kibetz Paulin l'Torah. He had many accomplishments in Torah. V'hu hika eshnei ariel moav. He went ahead, literally, and he killed the two lions of Moav, two great men of Moav. Shleiniach kamo lo b'mikdash rishon. So we'll say ultimately again, the Ariel is very interesting. The Ariel of Moab, interestingly enough, is actually a reference to David. David is responsible ultimately again for laying the foundation for the first and second Bate Mikdash. Benayah ben Yehoyada was so great that there was no one like him during the times of the first or second temples. He went and he killed the lion in the pit on the day of snow. Ikra da Amri. the tavar gizizi de bar da benachas v'talal. Some say what it means is he broke the ice on the river and went down to go to the mikvah. In other words, he immersed. He immersed even in very difficult conditions. Iged de amri de tana sifra de beirab biyomad de sifsa. Others say that he learned the entire sifra on a winter day, on a very short day. So we see over here that, so we just follow this progression for just a moment. The Gemara just opened up a dramatic discussion, which is you're going to see some of them, I think, some of the most dramatic Gemaras. But the Gemara opened up the idea about, do the dead know what happens in this world or not? So what the Gemara just did is showed that the righteous are considered to be alive even when they're dead. Now, what does that mean? Does that mean like that they're alive and that they have an awareness of what's going on in this world even when they're dead? Or that, no, it's a metaphor for the idea that the righteous live on in this world even when they're dead through their legacy and through their impact. So that remains to be seen. The dead know nothing. Who does that refer to? So interestingly enough, the Gemara is going to say, the pasuk says, that the dead know nothing. The dead is not a reference to the dead. Who is the dead a reference to? It's a reference to the Rishon, to the wicked, who are considered to be dead while they're still alive. So the wicked who are dead while they're still alive clearly don't know anything. This is incredible. The pasuk is speaking about the idea that you could put a person who is guilty to death. The pasuk says, based on the testimony of two witnesses or three witnesses, yumas hames. It was said, yumas hames literally means what? The dead man will die. What do you see from here? Now, what do you mean dead man will die? The living man will die. Chayhu el hames meikara. Rather, again, you see the dead man is called dead. Why did Abbas say? Because ultimately, again, if a person was a rasha and did terrible things, then halacha lamaisa, he is considered to be dead even while he is still alive. We'll say an incredible Gemara. B'nei Rabbi Chiya nafak l'kiryasa. We'll say ultimately, again, the sons of Rabbi Chiya went out to the villages. They will say, now, why did they go out to the villages? Rashi says, l'sasek ba'avodas achuzasam. They had land. They had land. So they went out to tend to their real estate, to their agriculture. Iyakir lehu tamudayhu. They forgot their learning. They forgot their learning. So we'll say, what happened? V'havaka mitzaylat kurei. They were trying very hard to remember. Bosei, by the way, you understand the Musa over here. Why did they forget the learning of Bosei? Why did they forget the learning? Because they didn't learn. No deeper esoteric message over here. Bosei, the way Torah works is as follows. If you learn, you'll have Torah. If you don't learn, HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, you leave me for one day, I'll leave you for two. Right? At the end of the day, if you don't constantly plug away at the cultivation of your Torah identity, it leaves you. It is not yours. Just because you put in a full week last week does not mean, again, you could coast this week. Every single day requires an investment. And if I invest, it's mine. If I don't invest, I lose it. Sons of Rabbi Chiya, who were great men, they went out to the villages because there's work to do. You have to work. Of course you have to work. And you also have to learn no matter what. They forgot their learning. So what happened? They tried very hard to remember it. This is incredible. Yoda Avun Bahait Sarah, and Abbas said at this point in time, Rabbi Chiya had already passed away. So his sons say to each other, do you think father knows about our tsar? They had incredible tsar that they forgot their learning. So do you think that our father knows about our struggle and can maybe help us out? Amar le'idach mina yoda, how would father know about our struggle? V'aksiv yechabdu banav v'lo yeda. The pasuk says ultimately again, his sons will honor him, but he will not know. So they understood this to be a reference to the idea. They know once the father passes away, he doesn't know what's happening with his sons. Is that true? That when someone dies, they don't know what's happening? After all, the pasuk says, Rabbi will be here in Eov, his flesh, literally, he will feel the pain of his flesh, and his soul will mourn over him. What does this mean? The Gemara says, "Rabbi Yitzchak, kasha rima lemeis kimachar bebasar achai." Basically, what this sounds like over here is that the person, the soul, feels the pain of decomposition. that as the body decomposes, the soul feels it the same way that a living person feels a needle in their skin. Now, listen, obviously, it can't be an actual reference to physical pain, right? Because in the Shema can't experience physical pain. But what it means for our purposes is what? Is an awareness. So if the soul has an awareness about the decomposition of its body, the body is here in this world, which means that the soul does have an awareness of what happens in this world. So the Gemara says, Amri, Bitsara dido yadi, bitsara dachrina lo yado. So the son answered, maybe the soul only knows about its own suffering, right? But doesn't know about the suffering of others. Below, is that not true? But I'll say, this is an incredible story. So just to understand, first of all, look how profound and moving this story is. The sons of Rabbi Chiya forgot their learning. They can't recall their learning. So they say, do you think father, right? Rabbi Chiya passed away. You think father knows about our suffering? And they're trying to figure out, can our father help us with our suffering or not? So both say, and again, they're trying to declare, do the dead know about what's happening now? No, both say, watch this story. Vatanya. We'll say again, if you see, by the way, look how this ties into Mesilas Yesharim. It's all one big shir. People think it's two shirim. It's one big shir that begins at 5:45. And so look at this. Remember again, we write the chassid. So there's a maisa with a chassid. Maisa b'chassid echad. Shenasan dinar la'ani b'erev Rosh Hashanah. He gave a dinar to a poor person on Erev Rosh Hashanah. So we'll say, the Marshaba, they points out that this was Rabbi Huda. Either Rabbi Huda ben Bava or Rabbi Huda bar Iloi. Either way, I will say both of these particular people were known as incredible aniyim. They were very poor. So this is a story of a person who gave a dinar to an aniyim Erev Shabbos, b'shani b'tzuras, in years of famine. V'knitaso ishto. And ultimately he got into a fight with his wife. His wife got very upset that he gave away what could have been their last dinar. So I said, now remember, nothing, right? So on Erev Rosh Hashanah, nonetheless, remember, there's a fight Erev Rosh Hashanah. It was so bad. V'halach v'alam b'bei sakvaras. He went to sleep in the cemetery. You know, so get ready for this. V'shama shtei ruch hoshem esapru zulazu. And when he's sleeping in the cemetery on Rosh Hashanah night, he hears two spirits speaking with each other. So, and there's two young women, right? And he heard one say to the other, "Chavirasi, my friend, boi v'nashut ba'olam, v'nishma me'achori ha'pargod ma paranos bali olam." She says, "My friend, let's take flight in the world and let's go me'achori ha'pargod. Let's go behind the curtain." Now, behind the curtain refers to what? Refers to the inner sanctum of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And let's hear what God has in store ultimately again for the world in the coming year. Let's hear what, remember again, it's Rosh Hashanah night. It's Rosh Hashanah night. Chodesh Baruch Hu is decreeing everything. Let's fly behind the curtain. We're still going to find something amazing. Why do these spirits have the ability to go me'achori ha'paragud? But you know the Gemara Avodah Zarah? The Gemara Avodah Zarah says that Chodesh Baruch Hu has a special place by his throne for children who die. Right, for young children who leave this world, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a special place by the foot of his throne for them. They have access to HaKadosh Baruch Hu like other neshamas do not. So these are two young girls, as we're going to see. So they say to each other, let's go me'achori ha'paragud, behind the curtain, and go to see what's happening in the world. So Amar la chaverta, ein yechola. So the other second girl responds, I'm sorry, I can't come with you. Shani kvura b'machatzeles shalkanim. Because I am buried in a mat of reeds. So she was buried in a mat of reeds. So I'll say, what does it mean she's buried in a mat of reeds? So the Maharshal comments on this dramatically. We'll say, the neshama is not totally free to ascend until the body fully decomposes. As long as the body is in existence, the soul is somewhat tethered. We'll say, this is why in Judaism, we bury in plain caskets, right, with basic shrouds, not because we don't love our loved ones, but because we want everything to decompose as quickly as possible. That is the goal. So the simpler the casket, quicker decomposition. The simpler the shrouds, quicker decomposition. The quicker the decomposition, the sooner the soul is unfettered and able to ascend to the highest of high. So this girl says, I can't come with you. Why? Because I am buried in a mat of reeds. And apparently, again, because of that, her body was unable to decompose. And because her body was unable to decompose, her soul was stuck here. So she says, Ella, lechi at, rather you go, umasha at shamas imrili. Go, tell me what you hear. Halcha hi v'shata ubava amra la chaverasi. Amra la chaverta, chaverasi ma shamat, amei choriya parka. So the first girl goes, and she comes back, and the friend says, nu, what did you hear? Amra la, shamati shekala zorei bereviri, shvana barad malaka oso. I heard that this year, whoever plants their crops after the first rainfall is going to be destroyed by hail. I will say, remember again, who's hearing this entire conversation? The chassid. The chassid hears this. So what does he do? Halachu, this is much like insider trading. Halachu, right? Vizara berevia shnia. So what does he do? He goes ahead and he doesn't plant after the first rainfall, but rather plants after the second rainfall. Shalkala olam kula laka, shalo lo laka. So he'll say, so what happens? So everyone else's crop was destroyed. His crop was not destroyed. So I'm going to say, so now at this point, Baruch Hashem has probably become a wealthy man. Watch this. L'shana acheres, the next year in Rosh Hashanah, halach v'lan b'beis ha-kvaris. I will say, now, either they got into another fight, right? It's possible. Either they got into another fight, or he figured, you know what? Again, I'm getting good tips over here. He goes to sleep in the cemetery. V'shama osan shtei rucho shem v'sapra zu amzu, and he heard the same two, spirits conversing. Amrachad l'cheverta bo'i v'nashot ba'olam. Let's go take flight in the world. And let's see what misfortunes are going to happen in the world this year. And again, same conversation. Amrullah. Both say this is now a year later. Nebuch. Amrullah. I told you, my friend. I can't come with you. I am buried in a reed of mats. So both say. So again, you feel the pain of this neshama that is stuck in this world. It's stuck here. It yearns so much. The young girl yearns so much to ascend. I can't come with you. I'm stuck in this world. And I will say, which is so incredible, because sometimes people do things that they think is a form of covet to their loved ones, right? The lavish casket. They think it's a form of covet, and it's not a form of covet. Just the opposite. What I'm doing ultimately into the neshama of my loved ones, keeping them here. That's not a service to them. That's a disservice to them. I can't come with you. You go, tell me what you hear. So ultimately, again, so the first spirit, right, the unfettered spirit goes, here's what's happening. So the spirit that was able to fly away comes back, tells the girl who was buried in the reed of in the mat of reeds, what did you hear? Amrullah shamati. This year I heard, whoever plants after the second rainfall, so the crop is going to be destroyed by heavy winds. Halach v'zara. So what happens? The chassid hears this. What does he do? Halach v'zara b'revia rishona. So this year the chassid planted after the first rainfall. Shakala olam kulon nishtaf v'shalo nilo nishtaf. Everyone else's crop was destroyed, but the chassid's crop remained intact. So this is incredible. Amar lo ishto, his wife said to him, Mipnei ma ishtake shakala olam kul alaka v'shakal alaka. So we'll say, nothing like a supportive wife. What did she say to him? You're not such a chacham, right? You're not such a chacham. V'haraya, 2 years ago, we were poor. I remember that fight on Erev Rosh Hashanah? So tell me, what's going on? Right? What's going on? How is it your number one you planted after the second rainfall? Right? Everyone else's crop was destroyed. Yours is not. Mm-hmm. Your number two you planted after the first rainfall. What's going on? Right? Furthermore, you go to sleep in the cemetery on Rosh Hashanah night. What's happening? So what happened? Sachla kala dvarim halalu. So he told his wife everything. He told her everything. Lo hayu. So we'll say, watch this. Lo hayu yamim mu'atim achinafla ketata ben ishto shal osa chasid ben ima shal osa riba. So we'll say, a few days later, the chassid's wife and the wife of the deceased girl got into a fight. Now we'll say, now again, the deceased girl, specifically the one who is buried in the mat of reeds. Amrullah. So the wife of the chassid got so angry that she said to the mother, you know what? Before you butt into my business, lechi ve'erech biteich shukavura b'machatzela shalkanim. Why don't you go take care of your daughter? Right? Instead of going ahead and butting into my business, why don't you take care of your daughter who's buried in a mat of reeds and whose body can't decompose? L'shana acheres, the chassid goes back now to the cemetery, the third year in Rosh Hashanah, v'lan b'beis ha-kvaris. V'shama osa rucho shemesapro zuem zu. And once again, the same conversation. The spirits are speaking to each other. Chavirasi, bo'i v'nashot ba'olam v'nishma me'achori apargod ma'poronos ba'li olam. So again, one spirit says to the other, let's go fly in the world and see what's happening in the world this year. Amrullah Chavirasi, the young girl buried in the mat of reed, says, Heni chani, leave me alone. Because dvarim shebini lebeinich kavar nishwa menachayim. The conversation that we're having are being heard by the living. So I'll say what apparently happened over here was what? The girl buried in the mat of reeds, right, knew what had happened to her mother. So she knew that her mother had gotten into a fight with the wife of the chassid, which means that now the girl understood that their conversations were being listened to. Alma yodi ma paranos. I'm sorry. Alma yod. I'm sorry. I just lost the place. Alma yodi. Right. Ultimately, again, therefore, what do you see? So you see, the dead do in fact know what is happening in this world. To which the Gemara says, maybe not. Tilma. Maybe not. Maybe someone else died in the interim, and the person who died saw the fight between the mother of the girl and the wife of the chassid. So we'll stop over here for today. We will continue ultimately again still in our conversation between what the dead know and what the dead don't know in Yiras Hashem tomorrow.